It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Okay, I need an ambulance right here.
A driver plows down a bike path, killing 8.
Eventually shouting, Allahu Akbar.
Inside of his truck-turned murder weapon was a note that was citing his allegiance to ISIS.
Another example of Islamic extremism right here in the U.S.
Well, the terror suspect identified as 29-year-old Saifullah Saipov in the country on the diversity visa program.
This diversity visa program should be gutted.
To New Yorkers, be New Yorkers and live your life.
We don't need politicians who will tell us to get used to it. We need politicians that will tell us they're going to fight it.
This is going to be the new sort of age or chapter of terror.
All right, that was the montage from Fox and Friends this morning, and surely you all must know by now that 8 people were killed and 11 injured, at least 11, on the bike path yesterday in New York City in Lower Manhattan. A Muslim shouting Allahu Akbar, who took a rental truck with a Home Depot logo on it, and killed these people on the path, then aimed for a school bus where disabled children or people were injuring them, and then going out into the street carrying what appeared to be 2 weapons. It was a BB gun and a paintball gun. That's what I'm hearing. Not real guns, but shouting. And of course, you know, when you see the video of this, you see the guy running around and just running free. And it occurs to you that that's because nobody in New York can carry guns. No one except the policeman can carry guns. If that had happened in Texas, if that had happened in Florida, that man would not have been running around as long as he was. Someone would have taken care of business. But I digress. And so the shooter was shot twice by a New York City policeman. Now they expect him to recover from his injuries. And of course, we're wondering who he is. CBS has a good tells the story very well, so I'll let them do that. Here it is.
It was just after 3 p.m. when the horror began.
We got multiple casualties. This is a mass casualty situation here.
A rented truck from Home Depot drove 15 blocks down a bike path beside the West Side Highway, plowing through pedestrians in a rampage that police said was an intentional act. Along the way, the driver hit a school bus. A nearby high school was just getting out. The truck came to a rest at Chambers Street in Lower Manhattan.
There was one female that I saw near the body. She must have seen it actually happen because she just kept screaming, and it was.
Witnesses say the driver then got out of his truck with fake guns before being shot in the abdomen by police. Tahid Kabir was a witness.
Then I saw the guy with 2 guns. He's running in the middle of the street. So suddenly then I heard the gunshots. Then I just went down because I was scared.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio.
This was an act of terror, and a particularly cowardly act of terror aimed at innocent civilians, aimed at people going about their lives who had no idea what was about to hit them.
Schools were ordered locked down, and a beautiful Halloween afternoon gave way to scenes of chaos.
We've seen a bunch of police and ambulance people, like they were running.
Ruben Cabrera is a student at a nearby college.
In the bike lane, I saw 2 bodies covered with white sheets, another body on the floor with EMS trying to assist them, and what appeared to be a Home Depot pickup truck just crushed from running into a light post.
It all came to an end about a block from where we are standing. Jeff, New York police are now heavily armed to make sure the rest of the night goes without incident.
All right, so that was CBS. And, of course, the rest of the night, the mayor encouraged them to continue with their Halloween parade. I saw little shots of it this morning, and it just seemed I made my peace yesterday. I said what I said about Halloween. I saw people marching in the parade with horror masks and blood dripping down and skulls, and I thought, you know, something's not quite right here. This is all just wicked. It's just wicked. And so, you know, now we're free to march in the streets with blood-dripping masks and carrying skulls. So that's what the mayor and the governor encouraged people to continue to do. I just think they're missing the point. And as I heard the governor speak yesterday, Cuomo, he kept saying, forward together. Well, that was, I believe, an Obama phrase. And I think it's a phrase that comes out of the old, again, communist playbook, forward together. Forward, you know, we're strong. Remember, we've discussed, we're Boston strong. We're New York strong. Man, we're too tough. Nothing to see here. Just move on. Just continue. It's really kind of bizarre. There was a commentary this morning that kind of captures my my feeling about this. It's written by John Moody, who is executive vice president for Fox News. And then he says, there's no way to protect. I'm reading just bits of this. There's no way to protect every block in our cities, every field, on our farms, every school, in our suburbs. We have become accustomed to our freedom to move around as we wish and together with whom we choose. The problem is that terrorists, those whose, now he says, perverted view equates God's greatness with acts of bloodshed, know how clueless we are and exploit our assumption that nothing bad can happen to us. And it is that careless confidence that makes us easy prey, soft victims for determined evildoers. Even before the names of the perpetrator and the dead and injured are known, there will be warnings not to stereotype, not to sully the reputation of any faith or ideology. Don't link radical Islam with terror. Yet now New York Mayor Bill de Blasio came right out and said this was an act of terror. That was already apparent to the New York City police, whom de Blasio had repeatedly insulted as racists and demeaned for quickly confronting the dangers of criminal behavior. That's the same de Blasio who pompously defied Trump's call to dismantle so-called sanctuary cities, making it tougher for authorities to find and corral criminals. Don't let the terrorists change your life in any shape, manner, or form, said Governor Andrew Cuomo just 2 hours after the attack took place. That's right, New Yorkers. Listen to your governor. Don't take any extra precautions on how you live your lives. Don't admit that there are evil people in the world who want to kill you. Then exhort God's greatness. Don't use that ugly word war to describe our conflict with radical Islam. Don't offend and don't defend. It might upset someone. Trick or treat. And that's the end of John Moody's commentary. I think it's excellent. It's on Fox. We'll put it on our Facebook page. And now we find out that this suspect was from Uzbekistan. I believe Uzbekistan is primarily Muslim. It's part of the old Soviet Union. We know how he got here now. He entered under our diversity visa program. A diversity, because, of course, New York City needs diversity. It looks as though this terrorist was residing primarily in Tampa, Florida, but then recently came to New Jersey for new opportunities. And so Daniel Horowitz has written a great piece about this, and I'm going to read from this, too, because I think it will give you an idea. It just gives you a better idea than me even saying it. He says, the act of self-defense and carrying a firearm is a constitutional right. Immigration is not. Whenever there is a major domestic shooting, the political elites focus our attention on gun control. Yet whenever we admit fervent Sharia-believing Muslims from the Middle East and they commit terror acts on our soil, we never have a family discussion over suicidal immigration policies. How many people must die before it becomes in vogue to speak that truth? That when you bring the Middle East to your shores, you bring the Middle East to your shores. The suspect in Tuesday's vehicular jihad attack in Manhattan is reportedly one Saifulo, Saipov, a Uzbek national who was presumably issued a green card by Obama's DHS in 2010. WABC New York reports authorities say he came to the United States 7 years ago from Uzbekistan under what is called the Diversity Visa Program, which offers a lottery for people from countries with few immigrants in America. He didn't fly over on an Air Force or sail over on a ship sponsored by ISIS and Al-Qaeda or some foreign nation state. We let him in through the front door, just like we did the 9/11 hijackers. Democrats will talk about violent extremism and Republicans will talk about endless involvement in overseas social work. But nobody will have a discussion on the core problem since 9/11. By the way, we'll post this article on our Facebook page. It's Daniel Horowitz, Uzbek, New York City terror suspect, entered U.S. under diversity visa program. Daniel goes on to say, last month we posted a report showing that 1.83 million green cards were issued to nationals of predominantly Muslim countries from 2001 to 2015, which has made immigration from the Middle East the fastest growing subset. And this was done after 9/11. This was the response by our political class. And now another post-9/11 terrorist was let in during this regime of hyper-immigration. And he goes on to talk about other forms and other people coming in. Then he talks about family members of them being brought in. Remember, he says, former FBI Director James Comey admitted that 15% of those subject to terrorism investigations were refugees. Yet when the president proposes a modest moratorium on just a few countries, not even the primary drivers of our immigration from the Middle East, our body politic has empowered a single district judge to shut down our national security. It's time for Congress to stop focusing on nonsense. It's time it stops making counterterrorism exclusively about endless Islamic civil wars overseas. And then he says Congress must clamp down on immigration. He goes on to solutions. You know, Chris Daniels, right. It's just an amazing thing. This guy came in on a visa lottery, and then he came in and slaughtered people. Turns out it was a Brazilian. These guys here for their 30th reunion meeting together. They were the bulk of those that were killed. I think six of them were killed. We'll hear more about that today, I'm sure. Speaking of Homeland Security, Mike McCaul, who wants to be the head of Homeland Security, he's the head of the Congressional Homeland Security Committee, and in my view and the view of many others, is a disaster. He was on last night with Brett Baer, and the thing that I noted about Mike McCaul is that he said too much. He said too much. I want you to listen to this.
Yeah, I'm always surprised this hasn't happened more. And again, as we crush the caliphate, you're going to see this branching out and trying to conduct more small-scale operations. But I'm very proud of what we have stopped. We stopped a Times Square bombing from occurring just this last month. We arrested an individual that was going to blow up Times Square. There are countless cases where the FBI and NYPD and others have taken down ISIS in the United States and stopped these things from happening. That's a good news, but we have to be right 100% of the time. Obviously, in this case, we didn't catch it. We have stopped, again, the Times Square bombing. Many plots. I can tell you the number of arrests and plots have gone down since 2015, 2016, but we still have 1,000 investigations in all 50 states.
1,000 investigations tied to what in all 50
potential
states?
Potential terrorism. That's how broad it is. And as long as they can propagate this jihadist material over the internet, that's their bandwidth, and it's global. Until we can get these companies to take that down, we're going to continue to see this activity.
Were you surprised when you heard this today?
I wasn't. I was just having a conversation in the Capitol after our chairman's meeting with a member of Congress, talking about what a soft target that place is and how lucky we have been that we haven't seen that kind of attack take place. It's something we always worry about. It's something that always keeps us up at night. But I do think, again, the victories we've had over ISIS in Iraq and in Syria have diminished their external operation capabilities out of the region. That's the good news. The bad news is the internet is still radicalizing them and instructing them how to kill people here in the United States.
All right, well, that was just a touch of it. But the only thing in that clip that really illustrates what I was trying to explain to you is that he said too much. Why in the world would you announce on national news that the Capitol is such a soft target? Just asking. Why would you say that? Do you think anybody's listening who might have an interest in going into the Capitol and doing something terrible? There was more they taught. They talked details about how undercover agents go in to make bombs. He talked about a lot of things, and I just think it's foolish. I think that President Trump is right when he says we should not talk about our plans and what we're doing. But we do, and the people that are leading us in Congress just seem to lack wisdom. And certainly in the case of Mike McCaul, in other cases, he's so bad on immigration. You know, ask him why this visa program is still in place. I'm sure he's been all for it in the past, and now it's coming back to bite us. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Christians in North Korea face unimaginable persecution.
The heart of the Orange Letter campaign is to give you an opportunity to encourage, to support, and to strengthen believers that you will never meet this side of eternity.
It's simple, but powerful. Write a short letter to a North Korean believer filled with encouragement. It might include your favorite Bible verse, a special prayer, and a personal note. To write your letter, visit EngageMagazine.net. That's EngageMagazine.net.
So what we're doing is we're partnering with broadcasters in South Korea who will send the radio message across the border into North Korea. The beauty of using broadcasters in South Korea is that people in their homes in North Korea are going to be able to be strengthened and encouraged with the gospel. And it's going to be your voice, your words, read and translated, and speaking directly to their hearts.
Write your letter of encouragement by visiting EngageMagazine.net. That's EngageMagazine.net.
Truth Be Told with Nate Kellum, Chief Counsel at the Center for Religious Expression.
The Pentagon recently severed all ties with Southern Poverty Law Center following its abuse of labeling groups as hate groups. In the past, the Pentagon utilized the Law Center's information on groups like the Ku Klux Klan to supplement its training manuals. But in light of the increasing hate labeling and rabid leftist agenda, the Pentagon recognized that the once celebrated organization has lost all credibility. The Pentagon made the right call. Rather than providing useful information about actual hate groups, the Law Center demeans groups promoting traditional values in a concentrated effort to undermine them. The Southern Poverty Law Center was called Crying Wolf.
Truth Be Told from the Center for Religious Expression, clearing the path for truth. Hear more at CRELaw.org, CRELaw.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Dr. Robert Bowen. I am the Dean of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, and I'm an Associate Professor of Physiology. So one of the benefits of being a faculty member at TMU is not only are we allowed to speak the gospel in the classroom and within our areas of discipline, we're encouraged to do so. Everybody needs to know the love of Christ. And so I try to incorporate in my classes, and one of the places that I incorporate in the most is in my office when I have students come in.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu. Today.
It's hard to believe politics can get any dirtier, but it can, and it did. The governor's race in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam, the Democrat, Ed Gillespie, the Republican. The Latino Victory Fund released an ad attacking Mr. Gillespie, smearing him as a white supremacist, a predator targeting minority children. It is a disgraceful and despicable advertisement. We have video posted at ToddStearns.com. The ad shows black and Hispanic and Muslim children chased by a white man driving a pickup truck, decked out with a Confederate flag and a Don't Tread on Me license plate. The lieutenant governor has refused to denounce the ad or distance himself from the group, so that makes him just as despicable as the Latino Victory Fund. And I suspect it's a preview of what we can expect in the midterm elections. We've got to be better than this, folks. We must be better than this. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I've traveled the world to learn, I must return from Russia with love.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That is actually the song that's used behind a video that just came to my attention yesterday. It's been out 2 months and I hadn't seen it. It's called It's Mueller Time. And it's just amazing, as that song, of course, is very romantic and beautiful. It shows, first of all, Michael Flynn, his face on a body, on a man running down a street while FBI agents chase him with guns. And it shows them capturing him. Then it moves to Steve Bannon being arrested by armed policemen. And you see James Comey standing, smiling, watching as it goes on. You see Attorney General Sessions being rounded up. You see Jared Kushner being arrested in a parking garage while Ivanka watches. You see Donald Trump in the final scene. You see Kellyanne Conway being arrested. But it's just amazing. And people think this is funny. And so it is Mueller time. It's time that Robert Mueller has issued his first indictments. He did the first on Monday of this week. And so you can pull that back, Rob. We've had enough of that. But I want you, we're going to put that video on our Facebook page, and I want you to see it because it really is disturbing. That's the only thing I could say is just disturbing. I've asked Jay Christian Adams to join me this morning. Jay. Christian, I'm sure you are called Jay sometimes, but Christian is an election lawyer. He worked with the Justice Department in the Voting Rights Section for a number of years. He is all over television. He has a lot of wisdom and, of course, a lot of knowledge about how the justice system works in this country, and I've asked him to join me. Good morning, Christian.
Good morning, Sandy.
Hey, I would really like your comments on that video. It's Mueller time.
Yeah, folks need to actually see it because it's the effort that went into it is pretty amazing. But you have to understand something, Sandy. A sizable portion of the anti-Trump crowd is in the midst of a psychotic episode. They are literally, and I'm not being facetious. These are people who are in a nihilistic, disturbed, crazed frenzy. And they thrive off of this. This is like torture porn to them. They really fantasize about using the power of the government to put in prison their political enemies. I mean, these are wannabe totalitarians, and so this is funny to some people. But really, when you watch the video, you need to realize that this is catering to a deranged segment of the far left wing. Who views America as an evil place, and it's not a quirky little thing; it's a sickening thing.
You know, I have to say, Christian, this video is even being circulated on, let's say, in places where you would think that the far left wing would not populate. I've seen it bragged on and affirmed by former law enforcement. I mean, it's just shocking to me. And you know what? It reminds me. First of all, it's not simply seeing them in court being brought to justice. It's violent. It's like they're being chased by guns, and as though they are murderers or terrorists on the streets of New York City. And this is funny to them. But it reminds me very much of a story that I happen to know about when former FBI Director Mueller was in Afghanistan. In the midst of the conflict, of course, he became FBI director on, you know, what, the day before 9/11, the first 9/11. And he had many years to sort of figure out who the enemy was. And yet in Afghanistan, in an office, in a private discussion with national security experts, he actually mused, like this was some, probably at least half a dozen years after 9/11, why do they hate us so? And I just thought it was kind of ironic. I really remember that because then you watch that video and you say, why do they hate Trump and the people that work for him so? Why do they hate them so? I guess you just answered that. But anyway, let's talk about the investigation. Do you agree that this indictment by Robert Mueller of Manafort and his assistant or his partner is thin grail when it comes to Trump collusion, Russia collusion?
Yeah, it's a terribly weak debut. I mean, we've been hearing for how many months that somehow Mueller is going to get to the bottom of this Russian collusion, which, by the way, collusion is not illegal. If a presidential candidate wants to collude all he wants with a foreign power, that's his prerogative before the election. Just like when Ted Kennedy wrote a note to the Soviet Union in 1983-84 that he could help defeat Ronald Reagan, that's collusion, and that wasn't illegal. So putting that aside, Sandy, we've been hearing this buildup for how many months? And you would think if there was anything that he would have debuted with something. And instead, we get this crazy indictment, not about Russia, but about rug stores in Alexandria, Virginia, where Manafort was wiring money to so he could pay for rugs. I mean, really, this is what has got the left in such a frenzy, is somebody was laundering money through a rug store and paying his home mortgage with money. I mean, really, it has nothing to do with Russia. It doesn't have a single act. That's what people need to understand. I've read the indictment. There's not a single act related to either Russia or the campaign. It's all stuff he did before there was a campaign. Something going back to when Mueller was head of the FBI.
But it really is kind of amazing. My understanding so far, Christian, of the vitriol, though, toward Manafort. Look, I don't know Manafort. I'm not a defender of him. If he's done something illegal, I won't defend that. But the raid on his home in the early morning hours, the house arrest now. He can't leave his house except for to go to church or certain important things. He can't leave. He's under house arrest. And my understanding of the law on registering as an agent, foreign agent, I forgot exactly the words, registering as an agent of a foreign government, my understanding is that statute is an encouragement that people are not sent to prison for it. It's sort of like a positive. Maybe they should be, but that they generally have not been. And it's an encouragement. It's supposed to be encouraging them to register. It's not supposed to be written to send them to prison. Is that your understanding?
Well, there's all sorts of inconsistencies. That's just one of them, that they don't really prosecute this statute. But, you know, when it comes to the FBI, and especially when you have an investigation that is being led by Democrat lawyers, and when I say that, I mean lawyers who have been hired by Mueller to do this, who are uniformly Democrats, who are overtly Democrats. When you have that sort of thing happening, you're going to have a zeal in the prosecution you might not otherwise have, because after all, this is a political prosecution. This is about politics. And so the best thing to do when you want a zealous prosecution is to bring in a bunch of lawyers who are loyal to the opposing party, and that's exactly what Mueller has done.
You know, I have to say that I've heard of FBI agents, former FBI agents, say that they wish Robert Mueller had shown as much enthusiasm for prosecuting terrorists as he has for going after Donald Trump. And you can even see it in his face. I just think that's not hard to show, not hard to demonstrate. I want to talk about the Podestas, because John Podesta, who was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, and his brother Tony are very close. Tony Podesta runs the Podesta Group. The Podesta Group was involved with Manafort. They have now registered late to the game, retroactively registered as foreign agents, and yet there have been no arrests, no house arrests, no raids of their home. Can you see any reason why these two entities should be treated any different? Are we just not there yet?
Well, I've already answered your question. Because the Podestas are Democrats. I mean, that's why they're going to be treated differently. Why was Eric Holder, who was found in criminal contempt of Congress, why was his case not referred to the grand jury? Because a Democrat was in charge of the U.S. Attorney's Office. Why was, go down the list of any number, why was Hillary given a pass for allowing classified information to be in a place where it could be captured by a foreign government? That's because she's a Democrat. I mean, this is justice in the post-Obama world, where a Justice Department is completely filled up with left-leaning prosecutors, lawyers, policy analysts. That's what Washington is. Folks need to understand it's a company town. And, you know, if you live in Omaha or Minnesota or Alabama, you really don't have any concept, unless you've lived in this place, how the culture here is all left-leaning. And, you know, when you get that, you get a bunch of Democrats who are in charge of making these decisions, and they just view the world differently.
But all this time, you know, people early on thought Robert Mueller is a Republican. He's registered as a look, I don't want to make this a partisan thing, but I guess we have to for the purposes of this discussion. I think of it more in terms of left and right. But let's just say Mueller was a registered Republican. It was George W. Bush who appointed him. And then when it came, his term was up, Barack Obama reappointed him, which surprised many of us. But Christian, now we know that Robert Mueller knew all about this investigation of the Russians buying our 20% of our uranium and a lot of the, it appears, millions of dollars going to the Clinton Foundation. He knew all about that. So maybe, do you think that might explain why President Obama reappointed Bob Mueller?
Right. And I think you're right in the sense that he could be relied on to, there's another class in this town that is a little harder to describe. It's essentially institutionalists, people who have no problem with the power of government, as we've seen in the Mueller investigation as it relates to a lot of things. These are also people who think that the Justice Department is the sanctified entity that can do no wrong, that there's this long tradition, which, frankly, if you've paid any attention over the last couple of years, you know that's not true. These institutionalists are really this class of people who can be relied on to rarely, if ever, question the actions of government. And Mueller is squarely in this camp, where he is a reliable exerciser of power. And that's where he comes from, more so than the partisan divide left and right. But if you want somebody to really get the job done, you hire Democrats underneath you.
Okay, so then the other person that we probably should mention in this discussion is Rod Rosenstein, who is allegedly, who is, overseeing any kind of Russian collusion. And now we know, Christian, that Rod Rosenstein's signature was all over the documents that in the investigation, the FBI investigation, of the collusion, real collusion, and the actual selling of 20% of our uranium to the Russians. And that's not even being discussed by Rosenstein, but let's just say he knows all about that, as does Mueller. So Rosenstein really is technically the person overseeing Mueller, right?
Correct. And Rosenstein, again, another institutionalist, Sandy, Rosenstein either needs to get Mueller under control or Rosenstein needs to go. And look, Rod Rosenstein was appointed to this role because Sessions recused himself. Now, I want to make something clear for your listeners. It's very important they understand. Jeff Sessions is not the problem. Jeff Sessions, thank God he's there, because if he wasn't there, the person who would replace him would be way worse. And so Jeff Sessions deserves support, because Rod Rosenstein, if he were in charge, which he is in this Russia investigation, essentially, you see what the Justice Department would be like if it was Rod Rosenstein in charge. So Rosenstein is an appointment of President Trump. He came out of the transition, the institutionalists in the transition, who love the Justice Department and don't want to rock the boat and don't want to drain the swamp, picked Rod Rosenstein to be the number two guy at the Justice Department. And now he's in charge, and now we're living with what that means.
Yeah, all right. So, Christian, I keep hearing again repeated, the president can't fire Mueller. That would be a disaster. I don't know how. I just can't see how much more of a disaster it could be than it is currently. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, there's other ways to do it. So tell Rod Rosenstein that either he deals with this problem or he's going to be fired. That's step one, because Rod Rosenstein is very adverse to bad publicity. He has thin skin, and you can probably make some headway there. Remember, Rod Rosenstein is the problem more than Mueller, because he answers to Rod Rosenstein. So, Trump appointed Rosenstein. Trump can fire Rosenstein. Sessions can get rid of Rosenstein. But, that's where the answer is to this. Fire Mueller, maybe. Tell Mueller that this needs to get under control. You can't be investigating rug stores in Alexandria and home mortgage loans that have nothing to do with your original purpose, or else you need to go. That's another option.
You know, Paul Manafort is in a lot of trouble, though, Christian. I mean, it seems to me that I don't know how he's going to come out of this. There are two Obama-appointed judges overseeing the case for him and his partner. Not that he should. Look, I really don't know. I don't know enough about the law and this particulars of the indictment to know if he should go to prison. I really don't. But it just doesn't seem like he has much of a chance for justice. Do you agree?
Well, I think that these judges are, most federal judges, when it comes to criminal matters, are fair. But I will tell you, if you read the indictment, you're going to ask yourself, how does somebody get access to $75 million that they can just wire around? And that's just the way the game is played in Washington. You can wield enormous power, and he did, and it's a way that people get a lot of money, is because they have a lot of influence. And people all around the country and around the world want to pay people with a lot of influence a lot of money.
And so it goes, and that's why Washington, D.C. is the area is the most... The wealthiest people with the highest salaries and income dwell in that corridor. And that is the reason. I guess that is the reason. Christian, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time for us this morning. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Sandy. Have a good day.
All right, you too. Sandy Rios coming back with more interesting stuff. You know I will be in just a moment.
You brood of vipers. How can you speak good when you are evil? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Harvey Weinstein, co-founder of Hollywood production and distribution companies Miramax and the Weinstein Company, has now been exposed as a continuous sexual predator. This has been Weinstein's reputation in Hollywood for the last 30 years, but the horribly kept secret was exposed due to an undercover sting operation by New York police and an expose by the New Yorker magazine. No wonder Hollywood spews such smut into the culture. Their perverted works reveal their perverted hearts.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Many in America seem to have forgotten that its foundation was built on God. In this 40th year celebration of the American Family Association, we invite you to help us remind America once again of the truth behind our national motto, In God We Trust. You can do your part and display your faith with an In God We Trust car decal from the AFA store. Order yours today with free shipping at afastore.net. That's afastore.net.
The financial world certainly can be intimidating, and our livelihood, of course, depends upon it. But God is in control of all things. Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. I take your calls every day and give you answers from a biblical perspective and break down the day's financial numbers to help keep you informed. Financial Issues, every weekday morning at 8 o'clock Central Time and Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock Central Time on American Family Radio.
A Moment of Truth with Gary Bryden, Executive Director of the Association of Independent Methodists.
On March 10, 1913, Harriet Tubman died. A brave ex-slave, she repeatedly risked her life traveling into slaveholding states to bring dozens of fellow slaves north to freedom. She was a gifted speaker and became a popular abolitionist speaker. Her audiences were always captured by her wit and eloquence. She said on one occasion, "I always tell God, I'm going to hold steady onto you, and you have to see me through. Just so long as He wants to use me, He'll take care of me, and when He doesn't want to use me any longer, I'm ready to go." Her faith played a role in her freedom and in securing the freedom of others.
The Association of Independent Methodists, like-minded congregations doing together what can't be done separately. Visit aim2020.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. A jihadist murdered more of us yesterday in New York City. Worse yet, all other things being equal, it will surely not be the last such incident. So, have you had enough? Enough of the violence Sharia supremacists dole out to force us to submit. Enough of the leaders who insist that the guys yelling Allahu Akbar as they blow us up or mow us down are not terrorists, or at least not part of a terrorist group. Enough of the refusal to name the enemy or define the ideology that motivates them. If so, we must demand better surveillance, and the shutting down of mosques that incubate jihadism, better vetting to stop importing more jihadists, and better leadership that tells us the truth about Sharia and the jihad it commands and counters the threat they pose to this country now. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
There are a couple of things that came to my mind. You know, we were talking with Christian just now about the Podestas. By the way, Sandy Rios back with you. The Podesta brothers, very interesting. You know, John Podesta is the head of the think tank that is behind the worst policies you can imagine. He's an interesting character. When you think of Soros, you think of money. When you think of the actual thinking and the policy and putting it together and handing it to Nancy Pelosi or the Clintons or whoever, you know, proposes these ideas, a lot of this comes from John Podesta's think tank. And his brother, of course, Tony is the money guy in the operation. Tony Podesta The Podesta Group makes millions of dollars, and they were related. They were working with Paul Manafort on this this cooperation with money out of Ukraine. So, and then of course they suddenly rushed to register themselves as foreign agents. But that reminded me of, remember when the the DNC email were made public through WikiLeaks. Do you remember that? I talked to you about this, but you might not recall. I remember the spirit dinner that Tony Podesta asked his brother to come to. It was one of the most shocking revelations to me. I remember reading it to you. It's called Marina Abramović is a friend of the Podestas, and she's the one who prepares these spirit dinners. And she says that in her book, released in 1996, the ingredients call for fresh breast milk with fresh sperm milk, among other things. And so Tony, in this email, is inviting his brother, as I recall, to one of these spirit dinners that he's having at his house. And that was just, I'm just telling you, that's how wacky, Wow. That's probably too trite a term. That's how wicked and bizarre, as far as I'm concerned, the behavior of some of the people. I think someday when the mask is pulled off, just like it's being pulled off in Hollywood right now in terms of the sex abuse, the sexual activity, the perversity of male to young actresses, and now the homosexual activity, maybe even worse in terms of its scope. We're hearing more about that. I want to talk about that on a different day, but not today. We're seeing the curtain kind of peel back, and so it is in Washington. I mean, it is just wicked. It is a wicked place. You know, I have to say, I went, shall I say this? I think I shall. I have never been a party person. I have been a registered Republican for years. That's the truth. Because from the time I was registering, they were the only pro-life party, and they were just, they had more in common, their platform, with me, and they still do. The platform is terrific. But I've never been a partisan, and I've never run for office, and I've never... I remember taking a lot of flack when I was in Chicago for supporting the Democratic candidate for governor. He was a better candidate. He was a great guy. So I'm just want to put this in context. So I went to a big event by, I know, establishment Republicans. And I was with somebody that I knew who was connected, who was a big money person. And I was astounded at what I saw, to be honest with you. The money, I felt like I was in a movie set. It was the strangest experience for me. It was, I don't think I can find the words unless I get more specific. They had one part of this was this big house set up like a casino gambling thing where they had all the tables out and everyone was dressed. There was just a lot of, it really was like a movie, like a lot of flirtation, a lot of salaciousness, a lot of, the atmosphere was, let's just say I didn't really fit in. It was just odd. I was just, wow, look at this. These are the people behind the people. These are the money people. And this is what they like to do. And it's a wicked, to me it's wicked. Maybe I'm just, I'm a small town prude. Maybe I am just that. But I just felt there was a sense of the place that I did not like. I just thought there's something not quite right here. Well, I think, grassroots people are worried about, the things that matter and about morality, about the way money is spent, about good policy. These people, they're really concerned about what kind of money they're going to get out of various transactions. And that explains a lot of what we're seeing. And that explains a lot about yesterday. I told you, and I will tell you again, because I want to go back to this article. There was an article about an interview with a Politico reporter with John Boehner. It happened over the course of several. Why in the world John Boehner is interviewing with Politico, which is a, I wouldn't say it, people respect it in Washington, but it's certainly a leftist publication. So Tim Alberta was the guy doing the interview with Boehner over the course of all this time. And it's this article is just amazing. I read parts of it yesterday to you. And I also had told you before that John Boehner is consistently drunk. That's what I was told when he was serving. I think I finally did tell you at one point, but people wanted to, the small group of real conservative Republicans in the House knew that he was not only having a drinking problem, but but he was also making terrible decisions. And so this article just gives a lot of insight. He talks about how Paul Ryan did not want to be speaker and how John Boehner called Cardinal Timothy Dolan, Archbishop of New York, president of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, asking him to pressure Ryan. They refer to this as the Catholic guilt thing. That's what Boehner was trying to do, and it worked. So Ryan took the job. Ryan is now unhappy, they report, with this job. Feels like it's Boehner's fault. They're not mad at each other, but it's kind of a joke between them because now he has this thankless job, but he was the handpicked guy of John Boehner. That should say quite a bit, actually. And so I want to go back to this because I did touch on it yesterday, but I want to go back because this article is stunning to me. Throughout the piece, Alberta captures Boehner's disdain for conservatives, particularly the Freedom Caucus. Boehner has a special hatred for Representative Jim Jordan, the founding chairman of the Freedom Caucus, but also attacks current chairman Representative Mark Meadows, whose actions in 2015 paved the way for Boehner's demise. Boehner, by the way, Jim Jordan and Trey Gowdy were both seeking the chairmanship of the House Oversight Committee, so he's asked about that. Boehner praised Gowdy as his guy and said blank Jordan, and he also called Jordan a legislative terrorist. His problem with Jordan, the founding chairman of the ultra-conservative House Freedom Caucus, this is the Politico writer writing, run much deeper. To Boehner and his allies, Jordan was the antagonist in the story of his speakership, an embodiment of the brinkmanship and betrayal that roiled the House Republican majority and made Boehner's life miserable. Although he would tell me in later conversations that he holds no grudges against anyone, today Boehner unloads on his fellow Ohioan. Quote, Jordan was a terrorist as a legislator going back to his days in the Ohio House and Senate, Boehner said. A terrorist, a legislative terrorist. So Jim Jordan responds by saying, oh my goodness, I feel sorry for the guy if he's that bitter about a guy coming here and doing what he told the voters he was going to do. Wow, I feel bad for him. But in the end, we are not doing what the voters elected us to do. And what we told them we were going to do, we just weren't. And I would argue the same thing is happening now. That's not the end of it, though. So then John Boehner hates Meadows. He said, he's an idiot. I can't tell you what makes him tick. Wayne King, who works for Mark Meadows, tweeted back, I know what makes him tick. His faith, his family, his district, and voters. So that was the response to that. So here is the clincher in this piece. Boehner's anger with Meadows and Jordan, but now it looks like we know more clearly the underlying reasons why Meadows first went forward with the motion to vacate the chair and eventually forced Boehner to resign. Boehner was secretly working with Democrats, led by Pelosi, to keep his grip on power. There was a timestamp document that this Politico reporter uncovered that proved, by Boehner's team's own admission, that Pelosi would have given him Democratic votes to keep the speakership had it come down to another vote before Boehner resigned in disgrace. Alberta obtained the document titled Save the Institution, timestamped September 16, 2015, just a few days before Boehner eventually cracked. It has a detailed plan from Mike Boehner's chief of staff, Mike Summers, outlining the secret deal. In the memo, it says that his survival will be ensured if Pelosi has Democrat members vote present when the motion came up. If they did, Boehner could win the simple majority of Republican votes cast, which was never in doubt, as the number of GOP defectors was between 20 and 40. And so he had a plan to keep his power with Nancy Pelosi's help. They met privately. She agreed to it. And this is what I want to end with. This is, I'm skipping to the end. Summers, who was Boehner's former chief of staff, says that Boehner came to Congress wanting to burn it to the ground. But by the time he left, he was the ultimate institutionalist. And so I want us to share that. I just think that's profound. It helps us to understand and actually describes to you what's happening now. You know, people are feeling the same, conservatives in the House, and we could say the same thing in the Senate, but we'll pick on the House right now, are having the same fights that they had with John Boehner. They're having them with Paul Ryan because he absolutely is working against conservatives. He just is. He's not on our team in any way, shape, or form. And so we need to pray for them. That's all I can say. Today I saw that Jeb Hensarling is stepping down. Jeb was a strong conservative, Many wish that he had stepped up and taken more leadership roles. Many people tried to get him to do that. He wouldn't do it. Now he's stepping back. He's leaving the Congress. And that is a loss for conservatives because this is hard. These guys, like Congressman Dave Brat, Congressman Mark Meadows, and others on the Freedom Caucus, they really have a thankless job. They are trying their best to keep their promises to us as a nation. They're trying to do what's right, and that they're operating in the cesspool that I've just spent quite a bit of time trying to explain to you this morning. So we do need to keep them in prayer. I want to close with a couple of things. You know, it's going to be Christmas. This is November the 1st. Can you believe it? And so we are working with Samaritan's Purse, as we always do, to prepare these Christmas boxes for kids. It's Operation Christmas Child. You pack the box. It's a shoebox. And a Samaritan's Purse sends it to these kids in these terrible countries where there's war, poverty, disaster, famine, and disease. And they select the countries, and they send with these gifts that we pack, they send tracts that tell the story of Jesus in the language that the kids can understand. And so the collection week has to happen quickly because Christmas, you know, is coming quickly. So collection week is November 13th through the 20th. So that means you need to get your box right away so that you can pack it, so that you can take it the week of November 13th through the 20th. So if you want more details, go to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC, SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. And the other thing that you can do for Christmas, this is a great thing. It really is. And that is, I have told you about North Korean Christians. I mean, they don't dare raise their heads. If you are identified as Christian in North Korea, you and three generations of your family are murdered brutally. The camps over there are filled with people who are identified as, or maybe they suspect, as being Christians. Or they caught them with a Bible. That's not everyone in the camps, but it's a lot of them. They are suffering the worst persecution on the globe. And so there is something we can do. It's a small thing, but it's a really wonderful thing. It's called the Orange Letter Campaign. And here's the thing. You write a short letter to a North Korean believer filled with encouragement, like maybe your favorite Bible verse, maybe a prayer that you're praying, a personal note, just something that God lays on your heart to share with him. And so what will happen is that your letter will be translated, and South Korean radio broadcasters will translate them into the Korean language. And your letter will be broadcast on radio across the border into the homes of North Koreans. And it's just wonderful. I can't say, I'm excited about this. It's being sponsored by Engage Magazine, which is part of AFA. EngageMagazine.net. EngageMagazine.net is where you go to find the details about how you can do that. That would be something quick, you know. You don't have to spend a lot of time. They don't want a 10-page letter. Don't want your life story. You know, just something that God lays on your heart that you think might actually minister to someone in North Korea who's could hear that and just be encouraged. So will you do it? So EngageMagazine.net, and the other one is SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. Great way to start the holidays and also to get our minds off all of this stuff, you know? It can be so discouraging, can't it? But our God is sovereign. He's sovereign over the suffering people in North Korea, who eventually will be justified. They will be free. And the people that have perpetrated all that wickedness will be punished. Our God will see to that. And so in the meanwhile, it's our job just to be faithful, you and me, every single day. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.